This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play Stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. How are you? Happy Tuesday to you here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, back after a while away for the two of us. A shorter trip for Tommy, but the two of us haven't been here together for a little more than a week, and we are excited to be back here after a couple adventures. You might notice my nice tan there, Tommy, as I've been on an island for a little while with the family. Nice to get away. Good to be back, though. Taking your calls at 869-1240 if you're listening to us on KFH. Max Powers in studio. He's got your calls there. You can leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the places. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. And of course, for listening to us on the Odyssey app as well. Glad to be here, Tommy. Welcome back from Augusta. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Welcome back from Maui. You and I went opposite directions, but we both had pretty phenomenal adventures, it sounds like. Did you get some hula dancing in when you were in Hawaii?
We went to a luau. I did not hula dance. They didn't invite me up, unfortunately for them. But yeah, we had a blast. It was so good to take the family out there. We were in Hawaii. My wife and her family have gone out there forever. So it's a place that has grown on me a great deal, but to be able to take the kids out there now, made a big difference, and it was a lot of fun. I love it out there. Great people. The time, you know what? It's like 2 a.m. right now in the time zone I've been living in for like the last 8 days. So that's interesting. That time zone. It was so hard to keep up with the sports world, but a lot of it was really good because I could wake up on some days at like 8 a.m. and watch a little, little baseball. The national championship, which happened a lifetime ago, was at like 2 p.m. the first day I was in Hawaii. So it was great. It's a great place. It's a great experience. But it's not like, I'm sitting there griping and moaning to my bartender about Houston's loss in the national championship game, and he's just kind of like shaking his head. He's like, I don't know, man. He's like, I like surfing. I'm like, all right, fine. Humor me here. Cost me a lot of money, but whatever. How was Augusta?
Man, I don't even have words to put it into perspective. It was as perfect as it could be. I didn't even know what to expect going into it, but I can tell you that it exceeded what my expectations even could have been. Phenomenal. And the fact that I was there to watch Rory win the career Grand Slam, get his green jacket, man, it was immaculate. It was amazing.
Well, you get, and the great thing about that, because I was joking with you, I was like, you better be waving, when it was he and DeChambeau, I was like, you better be waving that USA flag and doing all that stuff. Nope. I was kidding. I mean, yeah. I think everybody on the planet was rooting for Rory McIlroy. And so the fact that you got to be there, you'd have a great story for people to be like, yeah, I got to go to the final round of the Masters. But, you know, if you said that in, I don't know, let's say 2021 on a random year, I don't know who won the Masters in 2021. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to remember when Rory got that one.
Yeah.
And almost choked it away again and all that went with it. Yeah. That might be the best part.
There were, you know, there have been other really historic Masters over the years. I mean, Tiger winning in 2019, his very first one in 97, Jack Nicklaus winning in 86. There have been some legendary final rounds of the Masters and, you know, big time. Like, this is one of them. And I don't know exactly at this point where it ranks. There's probably some recency bias that comes into play with it all time as far as the greatest final rounds ever. But it's at least got to be top five, if not higher than that for sure. Incredible. I mean, and the golf was great. The drama was amazing. There were so many things that I would have never even thought about had I not been there. For example, I'll just give you one quick thing. You know, most people know that there's a longstanding policy at Augusta National that you cannot bring your phones onto the grounds. So nobody had their phones. And the only way that you knew what was going on was when they would change the scores on the manual scoreboards around the course. And there were some boards that got changed slightly before other ones. So you would hear people react to that at another hole. And you're like, oh my God, what happened? Like, and then all of a sudden they would update the one right by you and everybody would either cheer or groan. You had no idea. It was like an old school game of telephone and people are like leaning toward, you know, to one another. Like, hey, I heard that Rory has 4 feet for birdie on this other hole. Like, you had no idea until you saw it manually. And so what was really fun was after we were done and we had left, going back and watching it on TV and being, because there's a lot that you, like, we were posted up on one hole. You don't see all the other shots, obviously. They don't have video boards. They don't have any of that. And so you don't know what happened until you go back and you watch it on TV. And that was something that I would have never even thought about until being there.
God, what do you even do right now at like to consume sports without your phone to react to it instantly? That's really cool. That's awesome. And yeah, you meant like, I think for cat, like you just like to be able to tell people that like the last one that I think holds like pop culture value is Tiger in 2019. Not that the other tournaments aren't great. They are, but they don't stick like that. This one will stick because Rory finally got it done. And I even think like had he won it by 5-6 strokes, it would be different than like, we're all watching. It's weird watching that on an island, Tommy. I'm sitting there trying to like smuggle it. We're all at the pool and I'm trying to like smuggle it myself and catch the end. This is like getaway day for us. So we're just trying to kill time at the pool before our red eye flight later that night. And so I'm like huddled around my phone. And then my wife, she was like, you should look around right now. And like all the men at the pool are doing the same thing. And I'm like, well, what the hell am I doing this? Like, I'm going to go find a palm tree and sit in the shade so I can actually see it. And so I do that. And when he missed, what was that, on 18?
On 18, yeah.
I hear a groan and I'm like looking around. I'm like, where? And then I look over and I'm like, oh, everyone's over at the sports bar. Watch it. So I ran over there for the final. But even there, like everyone was pulling for Rory McIlroy. Yeah. Everyone. And there was like a crowd of people. And I'm like, wow, it's amazing. So good for him. Good character. Good for you who loves golf so much. Did you have a egg salad sandwich?
I did. I had egg salad, had pimento cheese, tried as many different things from the concession stand as I could. The prices are so affordable. I think I spent $30 the entire day on a bunch of different things. So that was cool. The merch experience is insane because the items that you can buy, you can only get there. They don't sell them online. You can't find, you can find them on eBay, but they jack the prices up. The resellers do and all of that. You know, so I like, it's overwhelming. You walk in and it's not uncommon for people to drop thousands of dollars in that store, just buying everything. And I felt pretty good about, you know, how I made out, you know, with getting things for family and my wife and myself and all of that. But yeah, all in all, it was
your co-host.
You didn't ask me for anything. I would have got you something. You didn't ask me for anything. I
didn't get you again. I didn't get you anything from Hawaii either,
because you cannot take phones in. I had an old school list written out on a piece of paper, and I brought a pen and I'm checking things off the list as I'm going around and I'm buying things because you cannot pull up your phone.
That's awesome. I forgot to get you a necklace or something too.
So a puka shell.
No sweat. We have so much to catch up
on. We do.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I can't believe that the national championship game was a lifetime ago. We have that. We have Royals baseball to get caught up on. This Tennessee quarterback situation is wild. So we'll get to it all today. Your commentary, welcome as well. It's all Brock Newcaster back after a long way away. We'll be right back, right after this.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Trained to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Trained to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrecht. It's Tommy Caster. Max Power producing. We're glad to be with you. What a great, time away for Tommy and I. It's been a while since the two of us have been here. The majority of a Major League Baseball has happened, it feels like, since we've been away, or since I've been away. More games have been played since before I left. So we'll talk a lot of Royals here. We've got Felix Johnson coming up as well. Don't miss that. Our Chiefs insider, got to get caught up with Felix for the draft and all things, football and Chiefs with him. We appreciate Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up here on KFH as well. Certainly need it. The time change is it's going to take a minute to get used to, but we're here. Let's talk Royals, Tommy. So able to watch, you know, as much of that as anything else, a lot of baseball, a lot of Royals, a lot of Rangers, kind of in the middle of the day out there, but it was great to have it for the Royals. You know, they're in the middle of this stretch, Tommy, of a 10 game road swing. That's going to be tough. Guardians, Yankees, Tigers, 10 games against teams all in the postseason. They come out of a home stretch where they win 5 of 7 against two other playoff teams, Baltimore, Minnesota. You feel really good about it. Now they're struggling on the road. And that's not all that surprising, I don't think. They're going to go up against a good pitcher tonight in New York. But the Yankees take it last night to take the opener. It's interesting. I didn't realize this until this morning. Colt Reagan's only the second time, or it's the first time since 2020 he's given up more than two home runs in a game, which is pretty wild. But the Yankees got him last night, and home runs are probably going to be a big part of this series in that stadium and with torpedo bats. So the Royals are going to have to hit a little bit, and they just didn't do it last night.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, you going back to what you had mentioned before about their struggles on the road, Brandon and I talked about it late last week as they were getting ready to kick off the road trip and what the expectation should be for them. And, you know, and we actually talked to Jalen Thompson about this too on Friday, our Royals insider, about what the expectation should be, you know, and them, you know, being able to, if they can get out of this 10 game stretch on the road at 500, you feel pretty good about that. Now they're going to have some work to do to be able to get back to 500 because they dropped 2 of 3 to the Guardians and they lost last night. So you're going to have to make up, you know, some ground here if you want to get back to 500. But they've got an opportunity, you know, with Lugo on the mound, you know, being able to do that and get this going through the rest of the rotation. And, you know, ultimately, once they get done with New York, going to Detroit. But I think the big concern is the offense and how do they get runs? How do they get, production going where they're not leaving runners on base, where they're actually able to, convert those runners on base to run scored. I think that's been a major challenge. And, you know, honestly, even though we've seen those offensive struggles really come to a head on this road trip, even going back to the last homestand, it was inconsistent at best offensively. So that's a major factor, I think, as we're continuing to work our way into the season, where they're going to, I think, have some decisions that they need to make offensively.
That's the struggle of the team so far. It makes me, we got a pretty good sample size here now that we've, you know, when you get almost 20 games into a season. Like, I think it's not too early to start looking for trends. And this team was a streaky offensive team a year ago. It may be a streaky offensive team again. And I think that part of that it kind of gets you a little nervous because the starting pitching's probably, and we've talked about this a billion times, probably not going to reach the level it reached a year ago. I think that expectation is too much to ask. And that's not based on this year's guys. It's based on last year's. You just don't get that very often in baseball. So how do you now battle through a streaky offense? I think you have to manufacture a little bit, and I think you have to, we'll probably see some lineup mixing and matching. I think 20 games into a season, okay, like I would like to run the same lineup and the same placement in the order and all these things out there every day too. I think baseball is a little simpler that way, but maybe there is something to like moving some guys around, mixing it up a little bit, trying some guys in different spots, doing a little bit of that to help this team. Even though we all love those four guys together at the top, I don't know if you mess with that, but maybe you do something because they are. I mean, you're looking right now, and you're as bad as any offense so far in the American League. Like they've got to do something to get that turned around.
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily tinkering with the top of the lineup, but I think you've got to really evaluate if you are Matt Quatrero and even JJ Piccolo. I think you've got to evaluate the lower half of that lineup, and not even about moving players around. It's like whether or not some of these guys even play. MJ Melendez is unplayable right now. He just is. I mean, his batting average is under 100. Hunter Renfroe is basically unplayable right now.
When we talked about those two guys so much in the offseason.
His batting average is barely over 100. They're not the only two, but they're the two most glaring. Michael Massey has not had a good start to the season, at least offensively. You know, even at the very top of the lineup, Jonathan India is getting on base, which is good, but he doesn't have a very high average necessarily. But, you know, I think you can live with that because he is getting on base. But really, it's Renfroe and it's absolutely Melendez. And this goes back to, you know, all the discussions that we had during the offseason and throughout spring training. You know, I was surprised, and I think you probably were too. I don't know if I remember your take on it, that they didn't make any moves to strengthen and bolster that outfield. You know, and fortunately, Kyle Isbell is playing better this year, at least to start the season offensively. So that's good. You don't have all three of your starting outfielders, you know, being down in the basement, but it's not good at the corner outfield spots. And it wasn't last year either. And that's why it was so surprising that the Royals made no moves and really, you know, didn't really do anything to try to make that outfield better, at least offensively.
Kevin Biggio and Drew Waters get the start last night, which tells you they're ready to do something now. It's an interesting concept because India, you're right, after the blistering start has gone pretty cold. I think there are a couple of things. Michael Garcia has been pretty good.
Yeah.
They're playing him every day in different spots. Freddie Fermin bailed them out a little bit at times offensively, I think, last year. Maybe it's time to find spots for him. Salvi has not been off to a great start this year, which he can be streaky like that anyway. So this, again, like this team was this streaky last year. And then all of a sudden, Melendez and Renfroe both got it going at the same time, sort of, and the offense became incredibly dynamic. So there is a waiting game probably involved here. It's just, can they pitch through it to the level they pitched through it last year? That's a good question that I don't know that we know the answer to. Bullpen's certainly better. Bullpen's much better than it was a year ago, and that'll help. They're 8-9. You go through that kind of offense, you're 8-9. Probably, Tommy, part of it is that they've played nothing but good teams so far this year either. They haven't really had a chance to beat up on anybody yet. I think there's a lot of reality in that, too. And that, you know, you play that sort of schedule that they played to open a year, and you don't get a lot of games where you can come out and score 8, 9, 10 runs to sort of lift everybody up a little bit.
Yeah, you know, to your point, the bullpen has been a lot better, you know, outside of a couple of guys. I mean, Sam Long and Chris Stratton have not been good at all. No. And after the bad start to the season, and Brandon and I talked about this last week, too, that after the bad start that Angel Zerpa had, to the season, they haven't really used him. I mean, he's pitched the least amount of innings out of all relievers that started the season on the big league roster. Steven Cruz obviously was a call up, so you know, he hasn't gotten a whole lot of run out there. But Zerpa, they haven't really utilized a whole lot ever since he had a pretty bad start to the season. I wonder if that'll change, knowing, you know, the way that Stratton and Long have been pitching as of late. But everybody else, bullpen wise, has been pretty solid, has been pretty lights out. And you know, look at the starting pitching. I mean, you know, I know that it's been up and down at times. And if you're just looking at a, you know, straight up ERA play for the starters, Michael Wacha has the highest ERA out of all of the starters, and it's slightly over 4. You know, so for all the things, and it's a long season, a long way to go, but for all the things that you can point at, the starters are doing their job. And for the most part, the bullpen is doing their job. They're just getting very little run support. And that's got to change if they want to try to flip the script. And, you know, they're under 500 by a game right now. If you want to get back over 500, you got to change that.
I think they will. I'm not really that worried about much still right now. It's a schedule problem. As much as anything, they're going to have a hard time. They've got to finish this series, And then they've got to go to Detroit for four and face four good pitchers. And then they'll get some games in, you know, at home against Denver or against the Rockies, Colorado and Houston. And they'll probably have an opportunity there to score some runs. And it, but it doesn't like you, there's not a lot of relief schedule wise for a while for this team. Like it's going to be a while before they get like a long stretch of games that you feel real good about. There's a lot of good teams, we think, right now, and they just happen to play all of them. So they got to win at home, and they're going to have to figure out a way to win some of these games on the road. They're going to play two more against the Yankees here. Freed has been really good so far this year. That's who they get tonight. You got to go score some runs, and if it's not going to come, you know, when you go to New York, that's what's interesting. Like we talk about how do you manufacture – like at some point when you go to the Bronx, when you go play the Yankees, you just need to drop some bombs. Like they need to just hit for a little power here in this series too. You go to that stadium, go hit some home runs. And that's sort of what we're waiting on too. Bobby Witt Jr. has been great, but where, you know, where's Salvi? Where's Vinny? Where's the power from this lineup right now? And without Renfro and Melendez, you know, outside of those main guys, like we're not going to see power out of Biggio or Waters or Isbell or probably Massey. There's a lot of bats in this lineup, India, that are not going to hit home runs. Home runs is not going to be the Royals' thing this year. I don't think it is anyway. Like it never was going to be. So when they're leaving guys on, that's a problem. Like they should be manufacturing runs. That's why you bring in Jonathan India, right? You need table setters for that middle of the lineup, and they're just not doing enough of anything right now. We'll see. What do you think of baseball overall? There's not, you know, that we knew the Dodgers would be great. We knew that I don't know that we thought the Padres would be this good, but the Padres are great. The Giants are off to this blistering start, and I haven't paid a lick of attention to the Giants yet. They're 12-4. The American League is moderately predictable, I'd say, right now. Everything looks about like we thought it would, except maybe the Angels out to a good start. But we're almost a month into this thing. Tommy, how have you felt about baseball so far?
I mean, it's been wildly entertaining. I know that outside of the teams in the National League West that you mentioned, I don't know if I'd want to be in that division. Like if I'm an opponent, just flat because of how good these teams have been. And I think that it is still extremely early, but you can now draw some conclusions on some trends overall. And, you know, look, I think that the Royals, considering the division that they play in, it's going to be competitive. You've probably got four out of the five teams that could absolutely contend, but at least you're not playing in a juggernaut division like the National League West.
We can get trends out of this. Like we can definitely get trends out of this. That I think the trend we pay attention to the most right out of the gates here is that the division looks again like it's four teams deep. Don't you think? Minnesota's 5-12. I get it. Everybody in the world that doesn't think Minnesota's going to be good at some point this year. I think the AL Central looks pretty good. But Detroit might be the most surprising. They're following it up so far. They're 10-6.
Yeah.
We wondered if they'd be able to follow up that hot finish last year. Man, they can pitch. They can pitch.
That's the biggest thing. Their pitching is incredible. And so the Royals are going to have a pretty significant challenge, especially when you've got the struggles offensively. You continue on this series with the Yankees against good starting pitching, especially against Max Fried for sure. And then you go into Detroit and you got to take on their pitching staff. It's absolutely a challenge. I'd feel a whole lot more comfortable with it if the Royals were trending upwards offensively and not the other way around.
It's crazy about them is they're hitting. Like outside of these Yankees that the Royals are playing right now, it's the offense right now for Detroit that's been leading the way. So I don't know if that's going to continue as I just played a game with myself. Like if I look at their lineup, how many of these dudes do I know? I know more than I thought I did, but it's still like it's not a who's who in Major League Baseball, but the Royals have got to get it figured out. It's so funny that this is so similar. You know, they're not record wise off to the blistering start, certainly that they were a year ago, but we're having a lot of the same conversations that we had a year ago. streaky offense. Too many spots in the lineup are producing nothing for them. Starting pitching has been good. I got to tell you, though, if we're talking Royals and we're talking overall, you know, outlooks and things like that, I am really pleased with the bullpen. And I think over time, it's going to help the Royals win a lot of games this year. You just have to turn it into now, how does a good bullpen game allow the offense to come back in a game late? Last night, you got an inning and a third out of Schreiber and Lynch. Clean, right? Like, now you've got to be able to start flipping that around on the opposition a little bit. And while your bullpen is keeping you in a game, not just holding a lead, but keeping you in a game, get a little late offense. The Royals blew a lot of opportunities again last night. I had it on. I was listening through. They only had two hits in the game, but I was listening. I was watching it on like MLB Network because I was trying to catch up on work last night. And it was not the Royals broadcast that was on. And they were just almost laughing at, they were like, oh my God, another pop fly and another wasted opportunity. It was like an infield fly, like another wasted opportunity for this offense. My goodness. Like just nothing. Like you could hear it from the other side, right? Like it was interesting to hear that. They're just like, they just can't get anything converted right now. And that's the thing. Like they had opportunities even last night as Lugo's battling and the bullpen keeps you in it, that they just can't get over that hump offensively to string it together. But I think it's coming. I mean, I think it's coming, but it's visible right now.
I sure hope so. I mean, the only way that a bullpen can help you win games, you know, regardless of how strong they are, you've got to get the run for it. You've got to give them a lead to be able to hold. And that's been the challenge up to this point. So, you know, I don't know, and this is probably a larger discussion, a larger conversation as the days go on. Does MJ Melendez, do they need to move him? Like, do they need to find a way to, like, maybe send him down to Omaha for a little bit, get his swing right? I've seen some comparisons of back in 2014, the Royals actually sent Mike Moustakas down to Omaha for a period of time early in the season when he was really struggling offensively. He was in Omaha for a while. They called him back up, and he was an integral part of the back-to-back World Series runs that the Royals had back then. Could the same be said for MJ Melendez? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that you've got the big question is, who do you have to replace him? And, you know, what do you want to do while he's gone? But as far as him being, you know, a consistent player right now, it's not there. I mean, let's talk about his slash line real quick. I mean, he's got a slash line currently of 077, 182, 103 for an OPS of 284. You can't get much worse than that for a starting outfielder in Major League Baseball. I think you've got to make a move.
Brendan Hawson is headed to Iowa. So K-State loses one. How much have I missed, Tommy? Has there been a lot of movement in that? Like, have we seen?
Yeah, there's been some.
You're going to have to catch me up because, like, what has KU done? What has Wichita State done? We left town and we get a letter from the athletic director talking about the money needed and all this. And that's the thing. That's the part of being gone that has been near impossible to keep up with.
Yeah, there's been some movement, especially with Kansas State. Doug McDaniel is in the transfer portal. So that happened yesterday. That came down yesterday. He entered the portal. There have been a couple of others, and I know that I was looking at a list earlier of, you know, some of the different changes that have been made. Onyenso, he entered the transfer portal, so their backup big man is in the portal as well for Kansas State. But really the big one, you know, is Doug McDaniel. And, you know, he was going to be, by all accounts, the leader of this team next season. And so I don't know exactly what that means moving forward for the targets for Jerome Tang. But McDaniel is gone. You mentioned Hazen is gone and is going to Iowa. So, yeah, I mean, there are some significant changes, and there's going to be some rebuilding that Jerome Tang is going to have to do.
And that's an interesting – it's an interesting idea because that team last year that I still maintain, man, like the pieces, they just – for whatever reason – and we saw it, and so that feels a little bit vindicating – I just like, man, they're going to start over and I can't decide if I think it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know yet. I think it's probably not a good thing. It would be on April 15th where I would sort of lean or guess. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it would have been better had they been able to keep all of these players together most notably McDaniel and Hassan. So that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough at K-State.
I don't know what they did. By the way, they did land Bashir, who it was one of the top targets in the portal, I believe from Monmouth, and he's a pretty elite shooter. We talked to Tim Fitzgerald about him on Thursday, so you would think that he's maybe the replacement for Housen next season for the Wildcats as far as a shooting threat is concerned. Abdul Bashir, I believe is his name, so they landed him. They also got a transfer yesterday coming in from UNC Wilmington, Kamari McGriff, which I don't know much about him, but they were able to land him. He's a forward, and so you know they brought him in as well. And he was with UNC Wilmington for a long time. He averaged, this was in 2024, he averaged 11.5 points and 4 rebounds in a game. He started 12 of the 34 games he played in. So, you know, that's what they've got going on.
You mentioned UNC Wilmington. I did see that UNC Greensboro guard, is it Giles or Giles? I don't know yet.
Not sure.
Kenyon Giles. And it's funny, and I don't even say that tongue in cheek. Like, legitimately, we don't even have a chance to like learn much about these dudes. But he looks like a decent score, good shooter coming in, which the Shockers certainly need. And then they got Jarrett Valencia out of Monmouth. Didn't score a ton, but was an okay 3-point shooter. So a couple of shooters that can come in. Did I miss anybody else there? Shocker fans, you can let us know in the video streams as well. But I've got those two, and that's it for the Shockers. Not that those are bad; those are decent. Those are decent, you know, gets, I think, for the Shockers and what they're looking to try to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I don't know a whole lot about, you know, everything else that they've got going on. I know that last I saw, you know, obviously they were, you know, they were able to get the guy from East Tennessee. And that was Boyd, yes. Kron Boyd. That was really the main move prior to us leaving. And it sounded like they were able to at least get another one or two guys, you know, out of the portal over the weekend.
Drake Kendall, who, by the way, who they've already got, was an All-American. I mean, I'm kind of just trying to follow Taylor Eldridge at this point for all the Shocker stuff. And we'll get Taylor in. Once the dust settles a little bit and they start to try to piece a roster together. I don't think Paul Mills can talk about a lot of this stuff yet. So we'll also do that at some point. And I will get Kevin Solid. It's hard. It's really, really difficult to keep up with. It'll be easier at Kansas because everything involved will be headline guys almost certainly. But now maybe that's the road Kansas State's taken too. You know, they're not, we'll see if they go the road they went last year, which is kind of like high major, big key contributors just sort of changing places, or if they decide to go, you know, probably the route Wichita State's trying to go and a lot of others. You go poach the best of, you know, that next rung perhaps below to try and get players to lift up. But it isn't, man, it is impossible to keep up with. It's wild.
Yeah, and it certainly seems like, you know, Valencia, Jarrett Valencia from Monmouth is, you know, a top target, obviously, for the Shockers. And there are a lot of ties. I mean, a lot of ties with him and the program. I didn't realize until I started following it from Taylor Eldridge that P.J. Cousinard, former Shocker, coached him for 3 years at his high school. And then there are some other players that, you know, came from that same school, including Zion Pipkin, you know, is from that same high school that Jarrett Valencia is. So there are some ties for sure with Valencia and Wichita State already. So, you know, I would think that that would be a prime target and a prime addition for Paul Mills if they're able to land him.
I did see they didn't get Abioha out of Hoxie.
They didn't, yeah.
I did see
he ended up going to West Virginia. So that, you know, he's, you know, one of the main acquisitions. There's a new head coach for the Mountaineers since Darren DeVries left. It's the North Texas coach that's now at West Virginia. And he was one of the first guys that, you know, the Ross Hodge, I believe is his name, was able to land there. And so Obioha did not end up at Wichita State.
North Texas, the basketball coaching feeder school,
yeah,
now,
which pretty much
nobody saw coming, which is really interesting. Not disappointed to see that coach leave the league, if we're being honest. And then I saw Quincy Ballard goes to Mississippi State, joins Chris Jans. That makes a lot of sense. And, is a pretty cool landing spot for him, even though we saw it, we hated to see him go. Oh, this just popped into my head. We haven't talked about. So as I'm saying that about Ballard, and we wondered if he'd be a high major candidate, and in places like Kansas, obviously not, because Flory's coming back. Yes. What did everybody make of that? Yeah. That's one of these like news items. It's been so long since we've been here. Like, what is the vibe there now? Because that sort of changes everything again for KU.
Yeah, there were some really interesting comments, and I don't know if you had an opportunity to read Shreyas Lotta's article.
I just saw that he came back, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, so okay. First off, you were right. So I'll give you your flowers. You were right on that, that your gut told you that he was going to be coming back to Kansas, and I had kind of written him off. I didn't think that he would be coming back. So you were right in that regard. Where I was right was in an interview that Flory gave to our KU insider Shreyas Lotta from the Kansas City Star after he decided to come back. I had said that I felt like this was really an issue with the usage of Flory last season. And that was a lot of what Flory said, that, you know, he's not going to come out and say that he was trying to get more money and that sort of thing. But it really didn't sound like that was a major driving factor. I'm sure it was a factor in some capacity, but it really sounded like it was about the fact that he was not getting the playing time that he felt like he needed, even though he was behind and blocked by Hunter Dickinson. It seemed like from Flory and his camp that when KJ Adams went down with the injury and Flory was incredibly productive, as soon as Adams comes back, Flory goes back to the bench and saw his minutes decline over the final games of the regular season and into the tournament. And there was a lot of conversation, it sounded like, between Flory and his camp about, is Kansas the right spot for me moving forward? And would he have a better opportunity somewhere else, even though Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adams were set to lead the program? It sounded like he was able to talk to Bill Self, and, you know, Bill Self is a master recruiter and was able to convince Flory to ultimately come back. And I'm sure that there was a bump in NIL as well.
It all goes together. It's all why I felt like he was going to come back. I agree, I think, with where your head was, that it was a usage thing and not a money thing. And that's why I always thought he'd come back, because if it's just a money thing, nobody's going to pay him more than Kansas. So that wasn't ever like the thing. And if it's a usage thing, again, like if you're anybody in Flory's camp and you don't think Kansas is the best place for you this year, I thought that's where I was like, he's going to come back, because that's a disservice to that kid. There is no better place for him than Kansas. Never has been, never was going to be. The door was wide open. The issue was he didn't have a lot of room to play, and he's a freshman. And so that's where we talk about with like Bill Self and adjustments. Like, that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, for some of these older school guys, is how slowly can you even afford to bring somebody on anymore? And it's not going to be a problem for Darren Peterson. That's not what we're talking about, because Bill Self plays those kinds of freshmen. Great, whether it's Grady Dick or Johnny Furphy, like that's not the kind of freshman we mean there. But those bigs that typically grow over time in his program that you see are tantalizing, and then by the end of it, I mean, Bill Self can just walk in with a piece of paper in his hand and say, well, you want to find the best centers in college basketball over the last 20 years? I bet I've got half of them, right? Like, nobody does that better than Bill Self. So I'm glad that cooler heads prevailed and that they got what they heard what they needed to hear from Bill Self, because he's going to have the best opportunity to flourish there. That's why I kept saying he's going to come back. Like, this isn't a money thing. It's not like Kansas doesn't believe in him or anything. He's the key to Kansas, right? Like, they want to operate through a big. Now, I don't know if he's going to be the key. Like, they're not going to lean on him offensively like they did Hunter Dickinson or they did David McCormick in their national championship year, but he's going to be one of the big parts of what they do next year, especially defensively. And so that's who knows? Maybe he can become an offensive force like Doak did over time. But did we expect that out of Doak when he was a freshman? I certainly didn't. We just thought Doak was this physically imposing superhuman that was going to make it really difficult for other teams to do what they wanted to do. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, he's unstoppable offensively because nobody can keep up with him physically. Maybe Flory can do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean,
he's the best place for it.
The difference is the body type of those two guys. I mean, Doak was, you know, like a brick wall out there, and anything within 5 feet, he was automatic. Flory, is tall but lanky, not like Doak in that regard. But I think that there's a skill set there where he can certainly continue to develop and be a pretty significant offensive threat for the Jayhawks.
His ceiling physically is to be one of the biggest, most physically imposing college basketball player. I mean, I think that's why that's an arm length and all that kind of stuff. I forgot that happened, but we'll revisit some portal stuff in the next hour or two. But we'll come back in Sports Daily. We got a lot to talk about. Speaking of portal, this Tennessee quarterback situation is wild. Got to hit on that and other things. Felix Johnson joins in the next hour. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Tuesday. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, Max Power Producing, taking your calls on our KFH hotline at 869-1240. We can take your comments on our video streams, 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. Appreciate everybody for hopping on with us here as we find a groove again, or at least we'll go down swinging. It's been a minute since we've been on. We have a lot to catch up on. We'll do it. Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider, will join us in the next segment. We have that's it for guests today. But we've got other things to catch up on. We'll catch up on some of the other things happening around the sports world, the big headlines. If you missed anything on the Royals, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Speaking of Shocker baseball tonight on KFH, Wichita State's on the road in Lawrence. They'll face KU. You can tune in right here on KFH, 1 o'clock, Shockers at KU, or download the Odyssey app. At Odyssey app, you can listen to this show. You can listen to live programming, including that Shocker baseball game, which is... It starts at 6 o'clock, 5:45. Coverage begins here on KFH. So a lot of interesting stuff there, too. Tommy, Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. Let's touch on that real quick. I wouldn't say it's a huge, like, headline-type year for us, but Bob Lutz is in. Of course, former host here for years on KFH. His work with League 42 has, you know, been transformative for the Wichita community, so that's a really... cool thing to see him go into the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame. They're going to honor Mark Mangino this year because he couldn't be there last year. Anything else stand out to you with this Kansas Sports Hall of Fame class?
Really those two. I mean, big shout out to Bob Lutz. You know, anybody who has lived here for any length of time, you know, when he was writing for the Wichita Eagle, you know him. And I grew up reading his columns and, you know, had the opportunity to work with him, you know, here at KFH for a few years, and what he's done with League 42. There's been, you know, several different seasons of Bob's career, whether we're talking about columnist, reporter, on-air talent, talk show host, and then, you know, nonprofit president and CEO. All of it surrounding sports in this community, in this state. Well-deserved for him. And then Mark Mangino, I think in retrospect, knowing the positive momentum and all the success that he brought to Kansas football, and then contrast that with the way the program fell apart when he was unceremoniously removed at the University of Kansas, well deserved for him as well. And then there, you know, there are other inductees also, but really those two guys stand out to me.
I agree. Congratulations to Bob. And everybody that's in the Kansas Sports Hall of Fame class. Another story I want to get to real quick here before we get Felix Johnson next is, man, this Nico Iamaleava, and I hope I'm maybe butchering the name there, but good player, Tennessee last year. This thing has been a mess, and it all has happened, and I've been trying to follow it remotely, and it's been crazy, and he broke up with Tennessee, and I don't know how much anybody cares about the specifics of Tennessee's quarterback becoming a free agent other than the bigger picture of how this all, you know, has been reported to play out, with basically like some people describing it as a shakedown from a player and representatives, and, you know, numbers like $4 million being thrown around. And I mean, as a redshirt freshman, he was good, Tommy, but I got to tell you, like, I mean, I don't know if you're if we're going to treat this like professionalism, which it is, of course, and I'm Tennessee and I got a lot of players to play to pay. Like, I don't know that I don't think Tennessee. I think they're fine. OK, if that's what you want, go get it somewhere, because he won't. He's not going to get that kind of money out there from anybody. So good luck. Like, we'll see you later, and it'll be a hard lesson learned. But you know, until you have contracts when guys can do this, like, all right, go for it. I don't know what else to say.
It was really a non-story for me, honestly. And I know that it was a big deal was made of it, you know, when it all went down, but it was a non-story for me because there's nothing prohibiting this from happening now in the world of college football. And to your point, yeah, I guess if he wants to hold out and leave the program and not be a quote unquote team player, I guess that's your prerogative. Go and try to find it somewhere else, I suppose. And if I'm Josh Heupel at Tennessee, I'm like, you know what? Don't let the door hit you on the way out, man. You know, like we'll go figure it out elsewhere. And, you know, if you don't want to be all in with us with the amount of money that we're investing in you, then yeah, we don't want you on the team. Things like this are going to continue to happen until there are contracts, until there are buyouts, until there are things, you know, that can hold the players' feet to the fire, because we always compare what coaches can do compared to players. We always, you know, take a look at what the way the coaches are able to bounce around and blah, blah, blah. But one thing that coaches have are contracts, and coaches have buyouts, and it's not like they're just going to up and leave a school, you know, without there being contractual negotiations one way or the other. That's not the way that it is for players right now. I think that's where we're headed. I think that's where we'll be, but we're not there yet.
I think this one is a little more like we see this in basketball. We have seen this in basketball more frequently, I think, than football for star, like headline making players. There have been a lot of big, high profile opportunity transfers in football. Right? Like a player leaves for an opportunity. We just saw Will Howard. Congratulations, by the way, to Will Howard on his trip to the White House yesterday, because he was able to find an opportunity that made sense for both sides. Like, we've seen that in college football forever, but this is probably the most high profile, because Arch Manning stuck around with Quinn Ewers, right? That would have been probably the best chance for this. But like, if a player, you know, because in college basketball, this is happening, right? Players are leaving just because they think they're going to go make more money somewhere, and they kind of are. We haven't seen it, I don't think, as much in football like this. And okay, like, go for it. Like, at some point, you know, universities also have to treat this like a business, and they have to start valuating players based on how much money they're worth, right? If you think, I'm trying to compare, like, Nico's trying to be, he's trying to present himself, it feels like if he were coming off of, I don't know, Jaden Daniels Heisman Trophy year. Like, what are you trying to prove here by, like, because that's not going to work over time. Like, that will stop pretty quickly. It's going to be performance-based. And redshirt freshmen doing this, like, teams aren't going to do that. Because if you're Tennessee, would you rather pay? And I know the timing of this one is the most annoying, probably, for fans. But let's say you're Tennessee in a normal offseason, and Nico pulls this, and it's everything's equal, and you can pay $4 million for him, or let's call it $1.5 million for Will Howard going into next season. And dollars and cents matter, right? We know, we've learned, we have a good perspective. Letters like Kevin Saul, like, here's how much money. Like, when you know there is actual, basically, a pool of money that can be used, which way would you go if you were Tennessee? I'm going to go with the senior.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the experience. I'm going to go with the proven commodity. Even if that proven commodity ceiling may not be quite as high, If you're investing real dollars into it, I'm going to go with the proven commodity every day of the week. You know, this is one area where college football is different than the NFL and will always be different than the NFL, is that you don't have 10, 15, 18 potentially years to have a franchise quarterback in your program, you have a max of 4. I mean, maybe a little bit more depending on red shirts and, you know, things like that. But the maximum length of time that your franchise quote unquote quarterback for your program can be there pales in comparison to the number of years that a franchise quarterback can be with an NFL team, especially if they're coming out of the NFL draft. And, you know, look at Mahomes and the Chiefs and how, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots, like all, like the length of time, the shelf life is a lot longer, and it always will be in the NFL. So knowing that, college programs have to go with the proven commodity, I think, because you don't have the luxury of time to have a project or to have somebody with a lot of upside, but, you know, not the amount of time to develop them into a proven commodity, especially these top tier programs, the programs that, you know, are probably perennial CFP type teams. I don't think you're going to see a lot of situations where you've got, you know, an Arch Manning type situation where they're coming in out of high school and you're developing them over time. I think when teams are looking at going to the portal to find a quarterback, you're going to go with the guy that you know is proven. And that's absolutely the reason why Ohio State went with Will Howard. Like, they went with the proven commodity.
And two, like, if you're Tennessee, okay, you get, what happens next offseason? You can do this again.
Exactly.
Like Tennessee, he could not, like, they could not do this. And I also don't want to unfairly put Nico and Arch in the same conversation because circumstances matter. Arch Manning's money's never going to be an issue for Arch Manning, no matter how much he makes playing football. So that's not the same to compare him to a lot of these kids either, because yeah, he can afford to be more loyal. Not that he's not getting paid. He's getting paid handsomely to some reports more than any other player. So that it's just a situational thing is all it is. Like, this was never going to work at Tennessee. So will somebody pay him $4 million? I doubt it. I doubt it gets that high, but we'll see. We'll come back. Felix Johnson joins us to talk a little football as far as the Kansas City Chiefs. That's next on Sports Daily.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And yes, it is. It's Felix Johnson with us, our Chiefs Insider, Field Vision, Arrowhead Addict, lots of great stuff. Felix, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Jacob, how are you doing this morning?
We're good. We're glad to be back. Tommy and I have both been on some adventures, so a little back to reality today. It's early for my body, which is time zone. Now we're at 3 a.m. from what I'm used to, and I just went outside to help the kids get on the bus, and it's colder here than in Hawaii. So there's a few things kind of smacking me in the face here this morning, but we're glad to have you in. We're getting closer to the NFL draft. I want to get to the draft in a little bit, but you've sent me a couple of things that you guys have been working on at Field Vision, and we can start there. Position groups. You've been evaluating position groups. You've been taking this league-wide. I think for us, like, the big questions for me, especially when it comes to the defensive line, to the secondary, where are the Chiefs falling in these groups, and how has that process helped you maybe understand what their goals in the draft need to be?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting, and we've talked about it a handful of times over the last couple of weeks, where the Chiefs sit at. It's kind of interesting when you look at their unit rankings, they're not exactly in the top tier of anything, really. Like, it's kind of, they're not the best. They don't even have the best quarterback when it comes to the advanced metrics and different things like that. So if you look at their secondary, it seems like they would have the best corner in Trent McDuffie, or at least one of the top three. And colloquially known, he is one of those guys. He is a first team all pro. He is that guy. You'd think that Chris Jones is the best defensive tackle in football, and he is, but not due to the advanced metrics, because the guy doesn't like breaking double teams on run defense, just because why, when you're Chris Jones, you got a lot more stuff to do in January and February, so who cares about what's going on in September? So I think it's kind of interesting when you look at different things like that, because the Chiefs are obviously phenomenal in everything, just made it to 3 straight Super Bowls, winning 2 of them, but in each individual spot, they're kind of average when you look at the advanced metrics. Like, their secondary is about the 12th or 13th in the league. Their defensive line outside of Chris Jones is pretty decent, but outside of Chris Jones, what do you have? And their guys relying a lot on what Chris Jones does, sucking up double teams, getting a lot of attention, and then you get your George Karloftis's, your Charles Amenahu's, your different guys making big plays like that. So the Chiefs overall, their roster seems kind of average, but at the same time, we've seen the proof and the results that no, they're pretty good.
We are fast and furious in a position where, you know, people are doing mock drafts left and right. I mean, mock draft season is ramping up big time, and it has been for a while, but especially now as we get to the final couple of weeks before the draft. It's interesting because I feel like as of late, maybe the last week or so, a lot of the prominent mock drafts that I've looked at, I feel like more of them are shifting over to the thought of potentially a wide receiver in the first round for the Chiefs. And that may not ultimately be the direction that they go, but I'm seeing more and more mock drafts are looking at wide receiver at the end of the first round. How likely do you think that is for the Chiefs to use another high round draft pick for the third year in a row on a wide receiver?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting where we look at the Chiefs and say, yeah, their offense isn't what it used to be, but then they've made it to 3 straight Super Bowls, and so it doesn't really matter. But then in the third Super Bowl, they looked as bad as they did and looked inept offensively, and we know that they're not going to do anything philosophically different, where Andy Reid is going to be Andy Reid probably until he retires. Matt Nagy is probably not going to change anything massively. Even if he has any crazy ideas that are coming through, Andy Reid is still the final play caller. Patrick Mahomes is still going to figure out ways to win games at the very least. And so how do you make that offense more effective if you're not going to do anything, change anything massively, like from a play caller standpoint? You got to get those weapons. You got to go out and get guys. And when you don't have the money to do so in free agency, you can't go trade for T. Higgins, and obviously he was going to re-sign with the Bengals. You can't go out and make these big trades that we've seen other teams make, like for a DK Metcalf going to the Steelers this offseason, and we've seen receivers make moves over the last handful of years. They have to make the moves in the draft because these are the only places they can make the moves. So I think that, to me, they have to, but in all likelihood, we've talked about it here, they're probably not even going to draft in the first round because it's the Chiefs. They'll probably just trade out and see something crazy happen. But who knows, because it's Brett Veach and he doesn't like to show his card until it's time to play.
Yeah, it does feel like philosophically that's the part where I feel like they have options. If they're going to trade up, we've talked about left tackle. If you were going to go all in there, this is a good year to do it, because they basically were able to run it back, right? Which none of us expected that, I don't think, when this offseason started, but that's what they've done. Like, they're running it back. So what can you do to add? And if you think about, okay, what do you do to beat the Eagles? If you're going to run it back, like, what do you do to need to get over that last hump? It's probably make the offense better. Yeah. I get it. I get why they're getting mocked there. I don't think they're going to. We talk about rushing it. I just pulled this up. And this is to your point, Felix, like, it does feel to me like there were years in there where the Chiefs with Kareem Hunt sort of in his prime, or, you know, whatever, like, that they ran it more. They ran it more last year than any year in the last 10 more mm-hmm. times attempts per season. Like, they ran the ball more last year than any of the last 10 seasons. So I think this notion that maybe they will, or they're not going to.
Right.
That was as much as we're going to get out of that. So adding a receiver again, like, I understand why people think that's what they're going to do. I just don't know, like, where does that even fit? if you go at a wide receiver right now, when you brought back Hollywood Brown, when you brought back Juju Smith-Schuster, and you have Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy now and Travis Kelce,
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because you're taking a player in the first round at that position that doesn't really, like, how does that player even help? Unless they get Rashee Rice news in the next 10 days.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you, but it kind of goes back to the conversation of where else. Like, I mean, if they want a left tackle, they're going to have to trade up within the first half of the first round to get a guy that's worthy of starting in week one. You can hope for a Walter Nolan to fall to you at 31, or some defensive interior, maybe Derek Harmon from Oregon dropping down, an edge rusher. We've talked about that too. So it's about who's going to fall to you in the spots that you need. They're not going to have a left tackle, the best one in the draft, or somebody that's going to be able to start week one at 31. That's just not, in all likelihood, not going to happen unless something catastrophic happens, or they trade up like we've talked about. And so to me, it's like, if you get to 31 and the only option is to draft a wide receiver that has a chance of helping you on week one, maybe even week three, because we know wide receivers in this offense that we've seen over the last couple of years, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, that these guys aren't going to get it week one. It might take 6, 7, maybe 8 weeks. And by that time, Rashee Rice might be back or coming back from his suspension. So it's kind of hard for me just to say, yeah, go ahead and go draft a receiver for what you're saying, Jacob, but also, who else are they going to? Like, I mean, they can draft a defensive interior lineman, but is it going to be a guy of quality that's worthy of using the 31st overall pick, or a tackle? Because they've spent X amount of draft picks over the last handful of years on offensive tackles too. So are they going to waste another pick on that position again? And that's an even less productive, I guess, at least to the eye position, than another left tackle.
Let me ask you both this then, to sort of follow that. I get, like, no matter who they take there, it may not be somebody that jumps in immediately. I'm okay with that. Like, I can even accept that, whether they trade it up for left tackle. But even if you look, like, big picture of all the potential issues that are coming, wouldn't wide receiver not be, like, they've got Rice and Worthy. No matter how much Rice plays this year, like, that's not a position of need, not only this year, but that's not going to be a position of need at least for 2 years. Yeah. That's like, if you go take an interior defensive lineman or a pass rusher or a left tackle, and they don't contribute a ton this year, they're going to need them to next year. So at least it makes more sense that way.
Well, and then the price tag gets driven up on all these players. But if they don't play in, like, I think if a pass rusher doesn't play year one and then he's good for 2 years, you end up in like the George Karloftis situation where he's going to be asking for $100 million in a year or two. So with a defensive end or a defensive or a pass rusher in general, interior or on the edge, you're kind of running into the issue of, this guy is going to be worth the second most of anybody on your team. And so that's the problem that you run into. If you have a fleet of receivers, I think you kind of – it's not a problem, but kind of like what the Packers have going on, where they have like five guys and they need a number one. I think if the Chiefs had five guys, it'd be like, oh, here we go. Let's see where they're at. And so I think that's where the league is kind of heading. And unless you have a Justin Jefferson or a Puka Nacua or somebody like that in your wide receiver room, you kind of have to have a wide receiver by committee, unless we have – Rashee Rice news in the next 10 days. And so I think that's why this draft pick is so pivotal, if you will, because of what you're saying, where they can draft defensive line, edge rusher, secondary, or they can go left tackle or wide receiver. And it could point us in the direction of like saying, oh, this is where the Chiefs are looking at, where they're more worried. But in what you're saying, they can win the Super Bowl next year. And they can draft a receiver in the first round, and he can be a bigger piece of winning the Super Bowl this coming year, as opposed to any other pass rusher, edge, whatever the case may be, for a guy coming that may not play for another year or two. So that's where I think the Chiefs are. They're trying to win now. They need contributors now, and the only way to do that would be getting a receiver early.
But don't you think, too, and you mentioned George Karloftis a minute ago, let's just say hypothetically, with pick 31, they go edge rusher. Mm-hmm. That's, if they do something like that, and there's probably a couple of other examples also, to me that signals okay, they're not gonna re-sign George Karlaftis. Like, it's more of a, hey, we need to have not even a backup, but we need to have a future plan for once that contract, you know, gets large enough and free agency hits that, you know, we're not going to be able to afford that. We need to have the succession plan, you know, for somebody like a George Karlaftis. And again, there might be, if they go cornerback, that might be the thought process as well. There's probably a strategy in place where they feel like, hey, let's look ahead a little bit because we're not going to be able to keep everybody. They never are.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And that absolutely has to play into what they're doing, planning as a franchise. And obviously we've talked about it here. Patrick Mahomes is going to be 30 this year. So there's still a longer runway for this team than just the last 3 years or the next couple. So I think that what you're saying is absolutely right. But right now the window's open now and you don't know when it slams shut. And with a guy, I mean, obviously this isn't the end all be all, but this is where my brain goes immediately. The Kansas City Chiefs have a guy like Travis Kelce coming back for one reason, and that's to win the Super Bowl next year. Everything has to be pointed in that direction, and obviously everything is. And so I don't think that necessarily that's the conversation going into place where, oh man, George is going to be coming up here in a year or two, so let's make sure that we have a succession plan, which absolutely, it's going to be a plan. It's going to be something that we look at and that they're looking at, that their scouts are probably looking at. But right now, I think that the focus is on let's win the Super Bowl next year. We have guys coming back specifically to win the Super Bowl next year. If we're not pointed in that direction, what's the point?
You said they could, you know, they could draft a punter and win the Super Bowl next year, right? Like they were a team that got stronger as the season went on that had a bad game in the Super Bowl. And that's why I always like think of this pick as like, I think it's going to be a pass rusher. I still think it's going to be a pass because I think that helps them the most now and in the future. I just don't know how a wide receiver helps this team if Rashi Rice plays. I don't.
And I think if you allow Andy Reid more creativity, like if he's not going, excuse me, my dryer's going off. If Andy Reid is allowed to be more creative with more weapons just in general, then sure, don't run the football. Like if you're not going to run the football as effectively. Now we've talked about how they've run the football more often, but it's not as effective. Like I was looking here, they're pretty incredible in 21 personnel, but how often did you see two backs on the field for the Kansas City Chiefs? So it's really frustrating to see them not run the football, not run the football as effectively as they could. But if they're not going to give Andy Reid another incredibly athletic piece, like, I don't know, Luther Burden or who, like whatever the case may be, give Andy Reid another chess piece to figure it out, because we've seen Andy Reid with various amounts of chess pieces figure it out.
I don't disagree with that sentiment. I don't know. How do they play? How does he even, what are you going to run five receivers? You're going to run five receiver sets. Now, again, maybe they have an indication of something on Rice. Like if you're going to tell me that Rice is going to miss like eight games and you know that's happening, but you don't know when. Okay. Because I think what you don't want is what happened last year. Hollywood Brown goes down. Rice goes down. Now you've got to go pick dudes up, literally pick them up off the street or trade from them. I get it from that perspective. I do. And that does make some sense.
Well, and I'll even add on to the fact of like, you don't want to miss on the succession plan. Like if you draft an edge rusher or whatever the case may be, a Walter Nolan at 31 and Chris Jones is gone in 2 years or whatever the case may be, you wasted not only that first round pick, you got to use it again to rectify that pick. And if you have an edge rusher, a needed edge rusher here in a couple years, and you use that pick on an FAU a couple years ago and whomever you draft this year, and both guys aren't as good as you wanted them to be, well, then you got to use another pick on an edge rusher, probably early, probably trading ahead. So there's so many different scenarios. And obviously Brett Veach is going through all of them with every staff member, but these are the things that are going on, because you don't want to miss on any pick, let alone one that is not going to prove itself for a year, maybe two.
Yeah, I agree. All that work, all the, you know, insight you could need, Felix has you covered. Look for those positional reports. If, you know, kind of get some indication there at Field Vision, of course, has us covered at Arrowhead Addict as well. So this time next week, we're going into the draft. So we can make predictions. We can have all mm-hmm. kinds of fun because that's it. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's it. The draft is sneaking up on me. I don't know about you two, sneaking up on me more than I think it ever has before. Like, it's going to get here and we'll be like, whoa, it's draft season. Yeah. Last year we had it in Kansas City and all that stuff. It's in Green Bay. We don't really know what's going to happen. Like,
there's no quarterbacks. It's kind of a sad class. Last year we had 6 quarterbacks going in the first 12 picks, and this year we might have 2 going in the first 9, maybe. And so that's most of what you can judge how quality a draft class is. I put air quotes around it for our radio audience, but you never really, if the positions aren't sexy, nobody's going to look. It's one of those things where, like, it's just fine. Tet McMillan's getting some love, but he's Drake London. Like, he's that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, he's the biggest baller in the weapons part of the draft. And even then, it's like, all right, cool. So, and like Cam Ward, his comp, Geno Smith, woohoo,
Shadur, team or Shadur over whatever. Here. Let's go. He's Baker Mayfield Jr. is who that is.
Yeah,
just watch. All right, congrats. Felix, we appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys.
Here goes Felix Johnson, our Chiefs insider. If you joined us late, missed any of it, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. It's not that I'm not excited about the draft. It's just sneaking up on us, to me anyway. I don't know if that's a product of the transfer portal. I don't know what it is, but like it is sneaking up.
I think it's simply because the class is not great. I mean, from top to bottom, there are going to be diamonds in the rough for sure. But from a premier, top level, I'm not excited about it at all.
We're catching up. Tommy, you ever do a red eye flight? I don't know that
I have.
It's been a long time. We did one of those. Like before last night, we hadn't slept since Saturday overnight into Sunday. And then, you sleep for like 30 minutes, an hour, whatever on the plane. That's a wild, it's been a long time doing that. I mean, we traveled for like 15 hours without sleeping between.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, I kind of like the flight back from Hawaii better than I like the flight out to Hawaii because you basically fly that same distance, but then you have to keep your day going because you basically are going back in time with the time zone changes and all that. I'd rather, just for me, fly through the night and try to sleep as much as I can on the plane, but that's just, that's kind of me, I guess.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine. It was just like it's a time warp. It's a weird time warp because we don't like you're already we also did it with 3 kids, which they were pretty much rock stars on it. It's just crazy. And then to have to fly back from California, our turnaround, I've been like stressed a little bit, as much as I ever stress out, which isn't much. But like it's been on my like we had to land in California at 7 a.m. on one airline and then be on our next flight by 9 a.m. The problem was we had to like go get our bags, exit the airport, go to another terminal, go back into the airport, go back through security, check those bags, do all that. So this whole time I'm like, man, and this was very stupid, but it worked out. Thankfully, I based our entire travel plans on the fact that you usually on the flight home from Hawaii, because the winds blow a right direction, gain time in the air than what they allot for it. And that's what we gained. We gained a half hour. And I was like, okay, whew, we made it. That's helpful. So once we made it through that, honestly, the rest of it was fine. Like it's like, this ain't no thing.
I feel like you and I are both doing okay. I mean, I think energy wise here this morning, I was worried we'd both be a little tired. We landed. I think you and
be a little ass dragging on the air today.
I thought so. I think you and I landed in the Wichita airport yesterday around the same time. Maybe about an hour, apart from each other. I'll tell you the one thing that I did not take into account. I told Max this earlier in the day. When you go to Augusta National, you do a lot of walking and my legs are on fire today. My calves are on fire. I checked my Apple Watch, when we were done, when it was all said and done, and I had taken 30,000 steps throughout the day.
What does that equate to in miles?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. I'd have to go back and look it up, but it was a lot. And so my calves are, so every time like we've gone to a commercial break, I've tried to like not move because when I do, when I stand up and I walk somewhere, like I'm limping, you know, my way around to get a cup of coffee or whatever. So it's, you know, that's one thing I did not take into account.
Yeah, I feel you on that. We walk a lot. Like we go to Hawaii, we walk every day, 3-4 miles. So, but not probably the same
elevation changes. Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I was thinking about you guys as I'm looking at just like how many people are there. Like it's crazy how many, and they limit it, right? Like they don't. You can't, it's hard to get in there. And I'm like, man, like you're standing there. I mean, how many people do you think were on the playoff hole?
Oh man.
15,000 people crowded around a green. And like, it was wild.
So we were posted up behind number 16, behind the par three. And we got there extremely early to put chairs down. So we were right next to the ropes, right behind the flag on hole number 16. It was perfect. But as soon as the last group, Rory and Bryson, went through number 16, we packed up our chairs and we just started walking and following them on 17 and 18 and then the playoff hole, but you couldn't see anything. And so, I mean, people are like 20, like it's 25, 30 people deep all the way around the green, all the way basically up the fairway on 18. You know, so it was wild. The sheer number of people, I mean, it took like over an hour to get out of the parking lot when we left. Like it was a lot. There were a lot of people there.
Yeah, it's cool. I what a tournament. It is golf season. Shout out to Crestview Country Club. I know they had a bunch of stuff going for the Masters. We weren't here for it, but it, like, to me, so we talk about trying to get out and play golf and, you know, Crestview's great 36 holes. And once we hit the Masters, that does feel like to me, the start of golf season. I don't know if golf people feel the same way. For me, it does though. It's like, all right, we got the Masters in the book. Let's get out there and play a little golf. That's what it's always felt like to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, Crestview, as you mentioned, did a lot of different things with the Masters. And, you know, Crestview is owned by a company that has, you know, a decent amount of golf courses around the country. I think there are maybe 30 some golf courses that the company that owns Crestview owns. There's a golf course in a country club that they own that's maybe 2 miles away from Augusta National. And one really cool thing about Crestview is that if you're a member at Crestview, you can get access to any of their other sister clubs. And so we were there on Saturday. We flew into Atlanta, drove to Augusta. We had quite a bit of time to kill. We went over to, it's called Westlake Country Club, went over to Westlake Country Club and had a beer and watched, you know, some of the third round of action of the Masters. We did. And it was beautiful. Okay, so it was so cool.
That is really cool. So you went out there with another Crestview member. They talk about this all the time. It's never been something. There are these courses all over the country. Yeah. We were last year, we were going to go when we went to NCAA in Omaha, like we had, cause they've got a course up there. I was like, well, guess let's go play golf. And it was too cold. Like it ended up being like 45 degrees or whatever. So we were like, nah, that doesn't sound like a good use of vacation time. That's awesome that you were able to do that. So you just walk in like you own the place, right? You just fling the doors open and be like, hey.
Well, I mean, kind of like that because we didn't make any reservations. We didn't talk to anybody. We literally walked in the front doors and we knew what we were going to say, you know, like, hey, we're members at Crestview and we, you know, just wanted to find a place to watch the golf and have a beer. Nobody stopped us. We just posted up at the bar. They didn't say anything. Like, we just enjoyed it. But then we found out we were talking to some folks there that, and we didn't end up, you know, obviously doing this. We didn't have time, but they, if you're a member at one of the other clubs, like they'll set you up to play golf there and feed you and you can drink like, and it's really, really simple. And so not that I'll ever have a chance to do it again, but if you do, if anybody does and you're a member at Crestview Country Club, you can get set up to go play golf at a golf course that's just a couple of miles away from Augusta National.
That's really cool. And one of the great perks there, give Crestview a call. We're going to get some listener opportunities to get out to Crestview and play golf. Maybe with us, maybe just on your own time. We're working on those details, so keep it here for that. But that's really cool. Tommy got to go see the Masters. You can all be jealous. Not just the Masters, but the final round of the Masters, Rory's history. All of that good stuff, all that fun stuff. it was a good way to kick off the golf season to have that happen and have him get there despite almost choking it away again. I couldn't believe it.
He had four.
He really is going to blow this again.
Like a 4-stroke lead with 8 holes to go. And yeah, it was full of drama. I think, you know, I mentioned it at the top of the show. I actually last night when I got home, after we put the kids to bed, I watched the final round. It was the first time I'd been able to actually like watch the back 9 of the final round. And the putt that he missed on 18 to make it go to a playoff, I'm like, I had no idea it was so short of a putt. It was a great bunker shot. I knew he was in the bunker, and it sounded like he had a pretty good, but I had no idea it was like a 4-footer that he missed. And like, I'm watching it for the first time, and I'm shocked. But you could tell when he won on that first playoff hole, that was like the weight of the world coming off of his shoulders.
Sure.
Right? Like, just the sheer emotion. I mean, just incredible. There's nothing else to describe it.
Yeah. And it's been so long, and all the expectations put on him early. It's like Sergio, right? All over again, all the close times. But it was good. Let's look ahead to tonight. We got Royals baseball tonight. They play again in New York. It's Waka, Freed pitching matchup, pitching advantage. I mean, I think at this point of the season, you would say goes to the Yankees, don't you? Like, I don't know how confident you are in Waka this year. I think he's going to be fine. I think I trust that he's going to keep them in almost all the games he pitches in. But I don't, like, I think expectations for him have to be a little bit reasonable. So pitching advantage Yankees, they're pretty heavy favorites tonight, actually. But an opportunity there for the Royals offense to wake up a little bit. You hope in that stadium, that's a good time to do it. It's 6:05 first pitch again.
Yeah, what Max Fried does extremely well is the pitch selection, especially as a lefty, it can be pretty deceiving for batters. And he has debuted as a Yankee pretty well. And so that's absolutely going to be a challenge for the Royals tonight. Pitching advantage, Yankees, for sure. And probably hitting advantage, Yankees also. I mean, I'm not surprised that they're a heavy favorite in this game. It's going to be a matter of, you know, Royals being able to get runners on base and not stranding them. And they've got to convert. They've got to take advantage when they get runners on base. I don't care how they do it. I don't care if they're, you know, super patient at the plate and maybe they can get a couple of walks off of Freed. There are a variety of ways to do it, but they have to be able to take advantage when they get runners on base. If they don't, they're not going to win this game tonight.
Well, they got to hit home runs. They got to hit home runs. I mean, that's it. You got to hit home runs, and we'll see if they can do it. I think Waka's got a fine chance. Look, listen, if you're going to give me 2-1 on the Royals to win that game, I haven't had the ability, been in the right time zone to bet in a while. I might take 2-1 with the Royals tonight. 2-1. That's a crazy margin. I wouldn't imagine the Royals play many games at all this year where they're that kind of a dog in baseball. And I'm not a baseball betting expert by any means, but that seems interesting. And then don't forget, you get Shocker baseball tonight against KU. And Wichita State baseball, Tommy, like, I don't know how much you guys talked about it last week, is just not performing up to where it needs to be performing right now. Plain simple, there's no way around it. Like, they are not where they need to be.
Yeah, they're not. And that's simply put, has to change.
And it can. That's sort of where, and look, we're trying to be real with it. Like, we're not going to sit here, or at least I'm not, and try to tell you why, because we don't, you know, we're not consuming them that way. But they're 4-8 in the league right now, 12-23 overall for a team that was picked second in the league. Like, yeah, like, you gotta, there's plenty of time in the conference to get things going. It tells you now, like, getting into the tournament as some sort of at-large is not going to happen now. So can they do something similar to what they did a year ago where they just get really good by the end of it? I'd like to think so. I hope so. But, the big opportunity tonight against Kansas. You know, Kansas has been, I don't know, like, can we say, I don't know what their expectations were going into the year, but they've got to be better than whatever they were. Kansas has been really good. Both Kansas and Kansas State, quite frankly, they've been really good. And they have not played Wichita State this year. So, you know, if you're a Kansas fan out there, there's your chance because they're, you know, playing the Shockers and you can hear it on the radio and all that. But for the Shockers, this is a big time opportunity on the road to try and go get a midweek game. Not that we take too much from midweek games, but for the psychology of the Shockers, see if they can get it done.
Jayhawks are really good. They've been one of the bright spots in college baseball this year. They've been a top 25 team, playing like it for sure.
That'll do it for us on Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Very happy to be back, everybody. It was a nice time away with the family. Very appreciative and fortunate to be able to get out to a really awesome place like Hawaii, which I would highly recommend for anybody that's never been out there. But it's great to be back. Thanks to TJ Cleland, to Brandon Zinner, to Rachel Hallam for filling in while I and Tommy have been away for a few days getting all caught up. But now we're back in the groove. We'll get all the news on the portal. We'll get you ready for the draft. We'll continue to follow the Royals. We're glad to be back. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. No matter who it is, here on Sports Daily, taking you through and getting you ready for your sports day. For Max, for Tommy, for Felix Johnson, I'm seeing you tomorrow.